Today, on an epic edition of Talk of Iowa, we're going to talk about new words that came to the surface in 2010 and the words and phrases you hope not to hear again in 2011. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. My guest today is word maven Patricia O'Connor, author of Origins of the Specious and many other books about the English language. Maybe you consider 2010 to be a language fail, or maybe the year provided you with many aha moments. We'll use the annual list of banished words released over the weekend by Lake Superior State University as a jumping-off point. We'll get the backstory on the words and phrases that made the list. If you'd like to refutiate, I think I'm using that right, or agree with what you hear, give us a call. Whether you're a mama grizzly, a papa bear, or something less ursine, it's time to man up and join the conversation after the news. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. Good morning. I'm Charity Nebbe. We're ringing in the new year today with a conversation about words. My guest today is language expert Patricia O'Connor. She's the proprietor of GrammarPhobia.com and the author of a number of books about the English language, including Origin of the Specious. And today we're going to talk about the new words that entered our lexicon in 2010 and the words and phrases you hope not to hear again in 2011. You can join our conversation by giving us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Let us know what your favorite new words are or what words you'd like to see banned from the English language. Hello, Patricia.
Hi, Charity. How are you?
Very good. Happy New Year.
Happy New Year to you, too.
Thank you very much. And thank you so much for joining us today. And I want to start as a jumping off point with the new banished word list from Lake Superior State University in Michigan. And they do this every year where they take nominations from people all over the country for the words that they would like to see banished.
Mm-hmm.
And so,
right. The criteria is that, or criteria are that the words have to be misused, overused, or generally useless. And there are a lot of words to choose from. And this year's winner, which received the most nominations, was viral. The adjective viral, which describes videos, photos, or jokes, any other thing like that that gets passed around a lot on the internet is described as viral. And apparently most of the people who nominated words to Lake Superior State U to be banned, most of them hated viral more than any other word.
That surprises me so much because to me that's not a useless word.
I know. I would think that it has a pretty good purpose. I mean, what would you replace it with?
I have no idea. Some of the suggestions from the comments were that, that these things used to be called highly publicized or
right.
popular. But I think viral
right.
is an excellent description of what happens.
Viral does it, and it also is a good metaphor because a virus grabs hold, it takes off, it's hard to shake off, then it kind of goes away. So I think it's actually a pretty good word myself. But the next word on the list is one that I do think is badly misused, I guess I'd say, epic as an adjective.
And that one does get used a lot today.
Right, to just describe anything big or important or good, as in, boy, that was an epic lasagna you made last night, that kind of thing. Very overused. Now, the next word on the list was a noun, fail.
Which is often combined with epic.
Yeah, right, as in an epic fail. But true, what's wrong with failure? Fail as a noun seems to me there's no good reason for it. It's just a way of catching attention. You don't expect to hear fail used as a noun.
Right. Well, and it's an online meme. I think, you know, there are blogs. There's the fail blog, which
right.
is very funny.
Is it? I haven't tuned in.
I have spent some time there myself, and it's very funny. So maybe I have more of an affection for that word than epic. Epic does seem overused. Fail just seems funny to me. But
yeah, it does.
maybe it's a bit too much.
And next on the list was wow factor, which I don't hear all that much, but it seems a little clunky to me.
Mm-hmm.
So I don't think we're going to hear it a whole lot. Then came aha moment, which I don't hear that much either. I guess it means more or less a eureka moment.
Right. My mother's been using that for at least 30 years.
An aha moment?
I'm very familiar with that
one. Then comes a few more. Backstory to mean history or simply the story of something, which I don't run across that one that much, so it doesn't annoy me all that much.
Yeah, that one doesn't bother me at all, and it kind of, again, it's not a useless phrase in my reading of it. But
right. Then there's an internet acronym, BFF, which means best friends forever. Someone is my BFF. I think it's just a little juvenile, I guess. Adolescent.
Right, right. We used that when I was an adolescent, even though we didn't text each other back then.
Then comes man up. Now, that one is more of a grown-up usage. We heard this a lot during the election season. Someone should man up. It means more or less to step up to the plate. I think it's gone away already.
Yeah, I think there was so much criticism of the fact that people were using it, even women were using it to other women, and I think it became so comical that maybe it's disappeared. But caucus season is coming up, so we'll know.
Yes. Now, next come a couple of Palinisms that many people found annoying. The first was a mistake, refutiate, which is a mashup of refute and repudiate.
Which she did defend.
She defended it, but if she had known it was a mistake, she probably wouldn't have used it. I mean, it was what, there's a word for that kind of thing, a fat finger error. When you're typing away, and she did this in a Twitter tweet, when you're typing away and you hit the wrong key, that's called a fat finger error. So it was either a fat finger error on her part, or what may be equally likely, she just didn't know the word. But the word is repudiate, so I'm sure she knows that by now. But another Palinism.
Even though didn't she come back to say that Shakespeare had used refudiate? Or maybe she said Shakespeare was allowed to introduce his own words.
Shakespeare invented a lot of words.
Oh, there we go. So she can too.
True. Let's see her write Hamlet, and then she can invent all the words she wants. But then another one was a legitimate invention of hers, not an error, Mama Grizzlies, which is a word she came up with to mean right-wing female politicians, and there were a number of those in the 2010 midterm elections. So that was another one.
Well, and I think we'll probably keep hearing that as long as Sarah Palin is still in the political arena.
We probably will. But I want to say something about this list. You may wonder how it came about. This Lake Superior University's list of banned words was invented by its publicist back in the 1970s, who thought that Lake Superior wasn't well known enough. And he saw this announcement as a way to get some press for the school. And so they began in 1976. The New Year's Eve of 1976, they made the first announcement of banished words, because on January 1st, they did it on New Year's Eve, because January 1st is a very slow news day. As you know, being a journalist.
Yes. Well, and I've covered this list for years, so I know all about it.
Right, and it's because there's nothing else to write about on New Year's Day. And, of course, it worked. This list
went viral.
About a lot. It goes viral, true. It gets hundreds of nominations every year, and believe it or not, the university has even copyrighted the concept. But there's another kind of word list that comes out every year, actually a number of them, and it's generally referred to as the word of the year, and various organizations choose one word that they think best characterizes the previous year, in that it was new or newly popular that year, or it was widely or prominently used, or that was somehow indicative or reflective of the popular discourse during the course of the year. And the first organization to do this was back in 1990. It was the American Dialect Society, which is a group of linguists, lexicographers, translators, editors, authors, people like that. It's a professional organization, and they started coming out with their Word of the Year in 1990 when their first nominee was Bush Lips. Remember that one?
Not well, actually.
Yeah. It referring to, of course, the elder George Bush. But ever since then, this Word of the Year thing, I think, has gotten a little bit out of hand because a lot of publishers of dictionaries have jumped on the bandwagon, and now it seems that there are umpteen announcements every year around this time of Word of the Year, so-and-so's Word of the Year, and another so-and-so's Word of the Year. And it kind of hit a low point, I think, this past year when the new Oxford American Dictionary announced its Word of the Year on November 15th. I mean, the year had another 6 weeks to go. But it was Refudiate, by the way. But I do believe that the American Dialect Society's list is the only one that is genuinely non-commercial, non-promotional. And also, since these are professional linguists and lexicographers, they've actually done some thinking about these, and they usually come up with their own list, and they're going to be announcing their Word of the Year this coming weekend. But some of the nominees are interesting. And here's a couple that I think are funny. Hafalog. Have you heard that one, Hafalog?
Hafalog.
Yes, it's half of a dialogue. And this is what you overhear when someone is speaking on a cell phone. You get a hafalog.
That's very nice.
I think that's kind of cute. And then hacktivism. This was inspired by the recent WikiLeaks controversy. And hacktivism is activism practiced by computer hackers.
I think that one could have some staying power.
Yes, I think it could too. Now, one that I'm sure is a flash in the pan is skyacking, which is jumping out of a plane in a kayak over a body of water and landing in your kayak in the water. This is a new extreme sport.
That sounds like something that would have come about in the 90s, but I guess
yes. They
just didn't get around to it
then. I guess they're running out of extreme sports.
And even during the Great Recession, they have...
Well, maybe these are people who have lost all their money, and this is a way to go out on a flourish.
Maybe.
Yes.
We'll talk about more of those new words in a moment, and we would love to hear from you. Let us know what words you wish you'd never heard or that you wish you'd never hear again. Or let us know about a new word that you've discovered or maybe one you've even made up that you'd like to hear enter our lexicon. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. Tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guest today is Patricia O'Connor. She is the proprietor of the website grammarphobia.com. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe. I'm here today with Patricia O'Connor. She's a language expert and author of many books about the English language, including Origin of the Species, which recently came out in paperback. And today we're talking about new words that came to the surface in 2010, words that you don't ever want to hear again in 2011. And we'd love to hear about your thoughts on the matter. 866-780-9100 is the number to call. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, even though I see someone on the line who wants to talk about that word tweet. We'll get to you in a few minutes, Naomi. And you can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Pat, Tom is on the line from Iowa City. Hello, Tom.
Hi, Charity. Thank you so much.
Well, thank you.
A couple of things. The word refudiate, when you type things, usually if you mistype something, it's because there's a key that's right next to the key or above or below it. But if you look at the P and the F keys on the keyboard, they are far apart from each other.
So I don't think it was a typo.
I don't think it was a typo.
I'm with you.
Anyway, there's some words that are phrases that I have heard in the last, and some of these I'm sure you've come across or you've talked about before, but the big one is the word like.
Mm-hmm.
Using the word like.
Right.
Like, you know.
Exactly.
And also the phrase, you know,
uh-huh.
The word awesome is overused. The word redouble instead of, why don't you use the word double first instead of redoubling?
Well, I think in bridge, I think there's a legitimate usage for a redouble.
Well, that's true. That's true. That's true. But when you talk about doubling your effort, do you redouble it first or do you double it first?
Well, I don't know. I don't hear that word that often.
Exponential is another one that I think it's...
People love using mathematical and scientific terms. I've heard a lot lately calculus used.
Oh, no, I have not heard that much.
Right, just to mean someone's plan or scheme, or they'll say the calculus involved in the effort was astounding. There's no real calculus involved.
It's kind of like calculated, but you stretch it out a little bit.
True. The words that you mention are ubiquitous. They aren't just ubiquitous from 2010, but they've been around for decades, most of them.
But they seem to be...
They go viral.
Yeah, used much more often than is necessary. Yeah. I've got to give you a word that a lady I worked with a long time ago, many, many, many years ago, flustrated.
Oh, yes, that's a popular one.
Oh, really?
And actually, I think that has some legitimacy.
She didn't even know that she was making up a word.
Right. Well, she didn't actually invent it. It's kind of common. Mm. But it's a mashup, again. It's a portmanteau word. It's a combination of flustered and frustrated. And I think flustrated is good because it carries both meanings. You're not only flustered, but you're frustrated.
Well, maybe that one will hang on.
Yes, I think that it may actually make it into dictionaries. But this is not an unusual process. Words get created through all kinds of processes, and portmanteau words, combining different elements of different words, is one way that words do get created. So it may have been a mistake in the first place, but it's something. If it's useful, it tends to stick around.
Tom, thank you so much for your call. And Tom mentioned the word awesome, and we also have an email from Becky who says the word that I would like to see disappear is amazing.
Right.
At least I'd like to hear people stop using it so liberally.
There are three A words that I get a lot of mail about: awesome, amazing, and absolutely. That people just can't let go of.
Well, there was a very cute comment on the banished words list about the word epic. It says, standards for using epic are so low, even awesome is embarrassed.
Yes.
they all fall into a similar category.
But awesome, amazing, and absolutely, those three A words you'll find really get trotted out at every opportunity by people who've adopted them as more or less verbal tics.
I'm sure I'm guilty of at least one of those myself. Rick is on the line from Iowa City with a new word. Hello, Rick.
Good morning. I'm sitting in the dentist's office getting ready to be called in, so I thought I'd better hurry it up.
All right.
I'd like to introduce a new word, and I hope it becomes viral. I came up with it when I was tending bar for 20 years, and it's for a person who has no real personal skills, especially after alcohol. There is no sense of etiquette. There's no sense of consideration for the others. And I refer to people like that, even though they might be good people otherwise, as sociopathetics.
That's great, Rick.
Yeah, all right. That's good.
Oh, thanks so much for your call, Rick, and I hope the dental appointment goes well. Sociopathetic. That's a very good one. We have Naomi on the line in Dubuque next. Hello, Naomi.
Hi there.
Hi.
You definitely used the word earlier. The word tweet drives me crazy. I think what drives me crazy is that it's just become part of grown adults just use the word tweet like it's a normal word, and it just sounds so ridiculous every time I hear it.
Right.
So what would you like people to say when they talk about posting something on Twitter?
I think that Twitter could just go away and I'd be okay with that.
I suspected that, Naomi.
So it's the whole technology that bugs you.
Yeah, it's just the constant need to be, you know, speaking to your audience or have, mm-hmm. you know, just your average person gets to have a following and an audience, and it's just, it's like turning everybody into narcissists.
I have to agree with you. I have a cell phone, but I only use it to call out. Nobody even knows the number to call me. I never have it turned on unless I'm calling out. And the reason is I don't always want to be reachable. I don't want to be always available to someone. Sometimes we need to be by ourselves, not communicating, not in touch. If there's some sort of situation going on at home where there could be something of an emergency coming up, I can always call every once in a while. And my husband feels exactly the same way. What's so good about being constantly available to people?
Pat and Naomi, the world is against you.
I know. I know. I'm a Luddite, I guess, in that respect. But tweet was actually the 2010 word of the year of the American Dialect Society, as most used word of 2009. And the word of the decade of the 90s was Google.
Yeah.
Oh, no, not the 90s. I'm sorry. The 2001 to 2009.
The aughts or whatever.
The aughts, right. It was the word of the decade was Google, which is a sign of the times. They have to do with technology. And look at the words we've been talking about, hacktivism, viral, epic. A lot of them have to do with the technology that's all around us.
Well, Naomi, thank you so much for your call today.
Thanks.
Thanks a lot. And I'm afraid I'm going to continue to use tweet because I think it's much, much simpler than, say, send us your question via Twitter.
Yeah, right. You know, another American Dialect Society nominee for Word of the Year is Bloggerati, which is those who communicate through blogs. And that's actually blogging is a way of life now. It's a big thing. I have a blog myself. It's not interactive. On my blog, my husband and I just post questions and answers to grammar issues that people send us, grammar or language issues. And in fact, if anyone out there wants to send us an answer or question, we'll be happy to answer it on the blog at grammarphobia.com.
But again, and that seems to be in keeping with your philosophy of not always being contactable.
Right. I don't want to run all the comments people want to make because then I'd have to put out all these little brush fires all the time. I'd constantly have to be correcting them saying, no, the whole nine yards is not about the size of a Maharaji's sash. You know, it would be a 24-hour-a-day job, which I don't need.
Yeah. Well, I think a lot of people have had technology take over their lives 24
yes.
hours a day,
yes.
or nearly so. We have a comment from Facebook from Tony who says, I despise it when people use adjectives as adverbs. You do not drive careful, you drive carefully.
Mm-hmm.
Also using good when you mean well.
Well, I do have a a comment about that. The ly adverb is the usual adverb, the one that ends in ly. But some adverbs are similar; they have forms similar to their adjectival forms. Like it's legitimate to use slow as an adverb to say drive slow.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it comes before the verb, you would not say slow drive. You'd say slowly drive. So some adverbs have two forms, ly forms and what are known as flat adverb forms. Good is another one. Good can be used. You can say, I feel good. Good can be used in that manner. I've written about this till I was blue in the face on my blog, but if there's an ly form of an adverb, some people will insist that that's the one that has to be used, but it's not necessarily so.
Karen is on the line in Iowa City. Hello, Karen.
Hi. So my pet peeve, I guess, are businessisms that take a sort of basic serviceable phrase and burden it somehow to make it sound more officious. I'm not sure exactly how to describe it, but one example would be just instead of saying from now on, saying going forward.
Yes.
That seems to have, everybody says going forward this year, and it's just annoying. It's sort of like many years ago, instead of saying now, people would say at this point in time. But I'm not sure what the motivation behind burdening these phrases is. It's just somehow to sound stiffer or more professional or something.
That is the reason for these phrases. I think you've described them very well. It's more officious sounding. And businesses will not use the word now if they can use at this point in time, because it's a way of dragging out the message, piling on. They'll always use a $2 word when a 10-cent word would do just as well. It's one of the ways that it's a characteristic of bureaucracies. And businesses aren't the only ones. You'll find this a lot in academia.
I was just going to say that.
Yes. And you find it a lot in government, too. So officialdom loves to sound official.
Where the pose is more important than the actual communication that's supposed to be taking place.
Exactly.
Yeah. Now, there's some examples that I've heard where, you know, sort of elaborating on the phrase actually add something. So when you want to say something's easy, some people are saying these days it's low-hanging fruit. In other words, it can be easily accomplished. And I think that's colorful and illustrative.
Sure.
And it adds something. But that's, I think, comes from a different place. The motivation isn't to sound more officious in that case.
Mm-hmm. It's to sound colorful or to throw in a metaphor that makes your speech more lively.
Mm-hmm.
But bureaucracies isn't lively. It's dead sounding.
Right.
Okay, well, thank you so much for your call.
Okay, bye-bye.
If you'd like to join our conversation, you can call us at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk, or you can send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. Next up, we've got Julie in Toledo. Hello, Julie.
Hello. Thank you so much. I'm having so much fun listening to this show. Language is wonderful, except when it's gross and disgusting. So, Miss Maven, if you possibly could you get rid of the most disgusting overused word of the decade? Impact. I-M-P-A-C-T.
Oh.
It annoys me no end.
Right. Impact
used as
a verb.
Overused.
Yes.
And it should be used properly to describe a linear function, but primarily to describe a wrench. It's a linear function. It's an immediate single line. And I think sometimes people do it because they're just trying to save the ink. Well, learn how to use effect and affect. Or if say ramification.
Right.
So, Ms. Maven, if you can, please get rid of that word for me.
Oh, Julie.
I would appreciate it very much.
Well,
you
Julie,
have a good time, okay?
Thank you.
I think you credit me with more ability than I have. I've been complaining about impact used as a verb for years, and I don't think it's had any impact on the usage of the word. But I think it would be much more effective just to say, instead of how will this impact me, either what impact will this have on me or how will this affect me? Much nicer. But I think the reason impact as a verb started to be used that way, is, again, somebody wanted to be different. Somebody wanted to be catchy and attention-getting, and so used a word in an unusual way, like the people who are now using the word fail as a noun. Like, boy, what a fail. The first few times you hear that, it gets your attention, your ears perk up, and makes you more likely to listen to what the person's saying. But after a while, it gets really annoying, and I think that person tends to be tuned out. And I tend to tune out people now who use too much of this kind of bureaucraties. It's another example of the bureaucraties the last caller was talking about, to say, how will this impact me? Or, well, this negatively impacted me. Aye, aye, aye.
So I think she hit on one of your pet peeves too, Patricia.
Right. I'm very liberal in language matters, usually. I think the language should be allowed to go its own way, and it will be whether we like it or not. But that's a really ugly one, and I'm definitely with the caller. I'm on her side. I wish it would go away.
Well, we will take more calls and talk about your language pet peeves, the words and phrases that you do not want to hear in the year 2011. Give us a call and share yours, 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk. You can also send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guest today is language expert Patricia O'Connor. She's the proprietor of the website grammarphobia.com. She's also written a number of books about the English language. This is Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. It's Talk of Iowa from Iowa Public Radio. I'm Charity Nebbe, and today we're talking about words, words you love that are new, that have surfaced in 2010, words that you hope to never hear again in 2011, or phrases, of course, fall into that category as well. Give us a call at 866-780-9100. You can tweet us at IPR Talk or send email to talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. My guest today is language expert Patricia O'Connor. She has the website grammarphobia.com. She's also the author of Origin of the Species and other books about the English language. And we've had a lot of emails on this subject. One of them from David in Waukee says, the word myself is way overused and almost always unnecessary. People use it as the subject of sentences, as in Tom and myself love the Hawkeyes, as the object of prepositions, as in Tom did it for Bob and myself. Myself prefers I or me, he says.
Myself agrees with himself. It's true. If you could use I or me instead, it's better to do so. Unfortunately, a lot of people can't keep straight the proper use of I or me, and so they use myself as a fallback position. It's better to learn the proper pronoun.
I've always wondered if myself is one of those words that people use if they want to make something sound more passive, like I or me is too in your face sometimes, and myself maybe helps you put
that
some distance.
Be. It puts a distance there. It you kind of recede from your role as speaker when you use myself instead of I or me. But myself does have legitimate uses. If you're in a sentence and you want to refer back to you've already mentioned yourself. Like, I made the cake myself. See, there's a case where you couldn't use I or me.
Right, but you could just say, I made the cake.
You could say, I made the cake. But what if somebody wants to say, did you make this from scratch or something like that? You could say, I made it myself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that there are, and there I said, you know, which was, I think, Tom.
Oh, this show
Tom
is making me so paranoid.
Like yes, I have to stop myself from doing that.
I think myself is an important word, particularly for children, because I did it myself is a very important.
Right. It's good for taking responsibility.
Right. And for showing off things that
yes.
you've achieved.
I mean, I wanted to mention a couple more funny pop culture words that came up in 2010 that the American Dialect Society is considering among its words of the year. They probably won't make it, but I thought they were funny. One of them is the word prehab. I don't know if you've heard this. It's a celebrity thing. This is this word first came about when earlier last year, Charlie Sheen, who has a lot of problems with abuse of various kinds, spouse abuse, drug abuse, whatnot, he announced that he was going into rehab as a preventive measure. In other words, he was going to have a stay at a ritzy spa that would get him a lot of media coverage without the stigma of actual addiction. Rehab as a preventive measure. And, of course, bloggers immediately started calling it prehab. And, of course, this is one of those cases where this is not going to happen to the rest of us. It's only a celebrity thing.
Right.
But another one was to hit the slide, which means to quit your job dramatically with a flourish. And this is named after that JetBlue flight attendant last year who quit his job, deployed the slide in the plane he was in, and slid out.
And didn't he grab a six-pack of something on his way out, too?
I think so. But to hit the slide then became a term for to quit with a flourish. Again, that's a flash in the pan.
Right. It won't last.
It won't last. But I thought it was a funny usage.
We did. Dana sent us a suggestion for a word that she likes. It's, and I may not say this correctly, conflamma. To mean conflict and drama.
Oh, conflamma. That's a good one.
Right. She says it's often used by Chicago police responding to domestic disturbances.
Oh, my goodness. The Chicago police are really inventive.
I guess. She also wants to do away with the word tremendous, as in she's a tremendous person. Do they really know what they're saying? She asks.
Yeah, that's another one, like amazing, that it is overused, or epic, overused.
Well, and does tremendous refer to size, or can it be used?
It originated as a size, like enormity, mm-hmm. Is often confused with enormous. It doesn't really mean size. It means terribly wicked or bad. But tremendous did originate as a size term, and it has morphed into this extra meaning of big or important, or amazing, or
awesome, or epic.
Awesome.
Right. Right. Mike is on the line from Anamosa. Hello, Mike.
Hello. My pet peeve is words or phrases that have been misheard and then reborn and just go viral, like hone in on.
Oh, yes.
I hate this particular phrase, and I was so disappointed in our president when he used it while he was describing one of the attributes of Justice Sotomayor while he nominated her. He said something to the effect that she had the ability to hone in on the central principle.
Oh dear, I didn't know he had done that. Too bad. I have to send him a note.
Yeah, he has another goofism, I suppose, that he says A instead of an.
He does?
Yeah.
You mean in front of a vowel?
Yes.
Sound?
Yes.
Oh, never noticed that.
That drives me nuts, because he's such a good writer.
Yeah, huh. He probably wouldn't do it in writing.
Probably not. But
might just be a speech thing.
Yeah, but that hone in on, I've heard that used by correspondence. And
yeah, it's quite common.
It's
a very common misusage. It should, of course, be home in on.
Yes. Or otherwise, you can go hone and play with your honing pigeons. And,
hone is what you do to your knife.
Yes, indeed.
Or your chisel.
Yeah.
Well, Mike, thank you so much for your call.
Well, I invented a word, in 1966 by accident. I was just trying to get away with something at the dinner table when I was a kid.
Uh-huh.
And the word was wuss, or wussy.
You think you are the first person who came up with the word wuss?
I think so. I had been chastised for saying pussy in referring to my brother, and so I wanted something that conveyed that and wimp, and I put together the two and made wussy.
Wow. Well, it has become extremely popular. So, yeah, well done, Mike.
My dog uses it all the time.
I haven't seen anything that goes before 1966 in terms of when it was made. Thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Mike. we're going to get chastised for something Mike said as well. But along the lines of someone hearing something and then repeating it, Noni sent us an email. She says she spent the last several years correcting people every time they use supposedly instead of supposedly.
Oh, right.
But I'm actually coming to accept it because it makes sense in its own right, something which can or could be supposed as opposed to something that is supposed.
It's supposable.
Right.
So therefore, you could say the adverbial form of supposable is supposably. Well, I think that's a stretch, but you never know. Stranger things have happened.
And if it brings you peace, Noni, then I think that's what's really important.
True.
All
You're
right.
at peace with your usage.
Right, right. Rita is on the line from Moline, Illinois. Hello, Rita.
Good morning.
Hi, what would you like to talk about?
This is an expression I've heard, and I don't think it's correct. I'm feeling badly. I thought it was I'm feeling bad.
Yes, you're right. It's I'm feeling bad. That's what I was saying earlier, that people seem to think that an adverb always has to have L-Y. But in the case of when you're talking about how you're feeling, it's common to use an adjective anyway. You say, I feel nice, not I feel nicely.
Right, because it reflects back to the subject.
Sure.
One of those linking verbs.
Right. I always think of the song from West Side Story, I feel pretty. It's not I feel prettily, it's I feel pretty. And it's, you know, that's why it's all right to say I feel good. You don't have to say I feel well. You
right.
can say I feel well if you're talking specifically about your health.
Mm-hmm.
But if you just mean you feel good, it's okay to say you feel good.
Mm-hmm. I think people are trying to do the right thing, and, you know.
Yes.
That's what happens. The other word is hilarious, which is being used over and over. It's leaned on heavily. We got a lot of words like that are leaned on. You said amazing and awesome is another one, you know.
Yes.
But hilarious.
Yeah,
with the
hilarious.
Accent on the
right.
second syllable.
Yeah.
And all those words, Obamacare, nanny state.
Right.
Deaths, taxes, those are words I can't abide. I can't.
I know.
They will
know.
Go, though. That's the great thing about political words.
I
just try to enjoy them while they last because they do disappear quickly.
Oh,
yeah.
Boy, I hope so. Thank you very much.
All right, Rita, thank you so much for your call today. We have a lot of emails today, and we have a lot of phone calls as well. So thank you so much if you've contributed to the conversation. I'm sorry if we're not going to get to yours, but we'll get to as many as we can. Paul
people
is...
People who can't reach us can always email me, and I'll answer your question personally at grammarphobia.com.
All right, and you can also find a link to that on our Facebook page as well.
Paul
is on the line from somewhere on Highway 218. Hi, Paul.
Hey, now I'm on Highway 34, sorry.
Okay.
I hope you pulled over to make your call.
Oh, yeah, for sure. Tell my wife that.
What would you like to talk about, Paul?
Well, I got a word that I'd like to see not in use, and another word, something that needs to be created. We need a word for it. I got both. What do you want?
Let's take the first one first.
Okay, the first one is quality. The use of quality without an attribute, without
a
modifier, it just drives me nuts. You know, a quality dress or something. It's like saying attribute dress. I don't
quality is not an adjective. It's a noun.
And I'm afraid this one is actually sneaking in very, very insidiously into the dictionary.
Right.
It may get there if we don't watch out.
Yeah.
And you had a second one?
The other one is a phenomenon which lacks a phrase, and I have a phrase for it, but I don't. It's a slang phrase, and the phenomenon is the tendency for cars to gather around police cars on the highway.
Uh-huh.
You know, if a police car comes up, everyone starts to go the speed limit, and they're afraid to move, and so it's like I call it a fuzz clump. You know,
a fuzz clump.
Like, fuzz clump, yes.
Oh, that's good.
You know, it's a slang word, I'm aware. So it's a word that we need an actual good word, not a slang word.
Well, when people slow down and cause traffic jams to look at accidents, it's called rubbernecking.
Yes, there's that. You know, and this is a good, you know, but the thing is police cars tend to gather other cars. Like,
right, because you don't want to pass them. You don't want to be the person to
pass them. You know, you're all in good behavior. I'm sure that they complain about it, police cars must. You know, they
start
like
waving you on.
Right, right. Well, Paul, thank you very much, and drive safely.
Thanks much.
Don't get caught in a fuzz clump. We've also got Steve on the line from Central Iowa. Hello, Steve.
Hi.
Hi, what's your word?
I've got a phrase that I cringe when I hear, and that's perfect storm.
Oh, yeah. Because of that book.
Sure.
I haven't read the book. I'm sure it was a wonderful book. But then people just started using it for everything, and not even for storms. A perfect storm of a this or a perfect storm of a that. You're right. That is annoying.
Oh, thank you.
All right. Thanks a lot for your call, Steve. So have you saved up any things that you've been really annoyed with, Pat, in the last year that you are hoping not to hear again this year?
Well, I hope not to hear again Mama Grizzly.
Well, I think you will, but that's my
sure
prediction.
I'm sure I will. The words that I don't want to hear are not really new words. They're the old ones that I get, like impact as a verb. Too much awesome, too much absolutely, too much epic, too much for sure.
Yeah. Lee says that she hopes to not hear the word totally used as an adverb, adjective, or exclamation ever again.
Too much totally. So it's not, these aren't new. So I can't really talk about them in terms of words of the year I'd like to see banned. But there are plenty of them that are just hanging around, and I'm afraid they won't go away. I know impact as a verb is already in the dictionaries. It's here to stay. That doesn't mean we have to use it if we don't like it.
Well, I have the phrase that drives me the most crazy. I don't know if I can say that or not. Like
sure.
I said, I've become very, very self-conscious about everything that comes out of my mouth now. But it's a very old one, and I think it is disappearing. But when we were talking earlier about useless words, this is the most useless phrase, as it were.
Oh.
It means nothing, and you will run into people who use mm-hmm. that and sprinkle it liberally into every conversation,
mm-hmm.
and
mm-hmm.
it means nothing at all.
Mm-hmm.
But I do think it is dying out.
Yes. And people used to say a lot, in point of fact,
another
in the
space
final
filler.
Analysis.
Right.
These are ways of just starting your new paragraph with something empty because you don't have a decent segue into it.
You're just filling empty space.
Yes.
Lowell says that he's tired of hearing two words used. First is the word sexy. He says it's being used to describe almost everything. I'm also tired of hearing the word transparent or transparency.
Yes.
Although these words are not new, it seems like they were used everywhere in 2010.
Yes, yes. And it's interesting, I just recently read in the New York Times a list of fashion words from 2010 that were overused, and one of them was transparent, used in a literal way, because there were all these gauzy fabrics that you could see through in the fashions of 2010. So you had to wear pretty underwear, you know, because people could see
your clothes. I didn't.
No, not the kind of thing most of us would wear. You saw it on the runway, and that was about it. But transparency and transparent are pretty pretty tired.
Well, we are out of time, but I want to throw in one more new word from Mike in Iowa City. He says groups of people who use Twitter a lot should be called twits.
Very good.
All right. Patricia O'Connor, thank you so much for your time today.
You're welcome.
Patricia O'Connor is the proprietor of grammarphobia.com, and if you go to her website, she will answer your questions about the English language. You can also read her books and learn a whole lot about the English language. She's author of Origin of the Species and other books. Talk of Iowa is produced by Dennis Reese. Our executive producer is Jeff Schmidt. Production assistance today from Mitchell Schmidt. Podcasting and on-demand audio of Talk of Iowa are available at iowapublicradio.org. You can send us email anytime, talkofiowa@iowapublicradio.org. And tomorrow on the show, we're going to talk about New Year's resolutions and how to set goals you can achieve. This is Talk of Iowa.